Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Pollinger.
Today, we'll be covering the offensive line positions, and we're going to talk about what the Bills have on their roster, what's available in free agency. Spoiler alert, it's not very much. And then we can talk about some possible draft strategies for the offensive tackle, offensive guard, and center positions. But first, I'm going to ask you, Nate, how important is the offensive line in today's NFL?
It's definitely, to me, way more important than most people will give it credit for. If you look at the best teams in the NFL, their offensive lines are at least good. They might not be great, but they're at least good to great. And to me, it's after the quarterback and the front seven on defense, I think your offensive line is the next most important position. On the field, or position group on the field.
Yeah, I agree with you. If you look at the teams that really came out of nowhere the last 2 years, the Eagles being the primary one from this year, and the year before that, 2016, the Dallas Cowboys and the Oakland Raiders, the common theme between those teams were all of a sudden they just had a completely overwhelming offensive line. And just look at how much it elevated the play of the quarterbacks on those teams. I know people are going to want to give a lot of credit to Carson Wentz and Nick Foles for the success they had this season, but the Eagles' offensive line was just menacing. They were manhandling everyone. I don't think did the Patriots even get pressure in the Super Bowl?
I don't think they did. And the thing, too, with them is they were probably missing their best offensive lineman. And they still were able to do this stuff.
And I think that just shows how important it is. You know, we see people talk about continuity on the offensive line. Well, continuity is not that important if you're continuously mediocre like the Bills have been. You know, the run game has been really good for 2015, 2016, 2017 took a bit of a step back with the zone blocking scheme. But the pass protection just hasn't been there, and you have to wonder how much would a better offensive line elevate the play of a quarterback like Tyrod Taylor?
So I'm going to play a little bit of devil's advocate here, just off something I saw on Pro Football Focus a couple of days ago. And Pro Football Focus rated the Bills as the second best pass blocking line in terms of how long the quarterback had to throw on average per play.
So I'm not sure on the measurement there, Nate. Is that just based on time to throw alone, or did they subjectively chart each play to see how long the quarterback had to throw before the quarterback evaded the pressure himself?
So it was, I'm not 100% sure how I'm actually going to try and find that out real quick, because I'm curious as exactly to what it was. Yeah. So what Pro Football Focus, the way they grade is, it's pass blocking efficiency, and it takes into account the number of sacks, hits, and hurries allowed by an offensive line on a per-snap basis. And it weights a little bit heavier towards sacks allowed, and they come up with a rating of some sort out of 100. And the Bills were second.
Right, and I know that's subjective charting. It doesn't seem like the Bills' offensive line passes the eye test when it comes to pass protection. You know, I think Tyrod really probably helps that rating a little bit with how well he's able to evade pressure. You know, he's going to take a lot of criticism for holding the ball, which he does do at times. He takes sacks he shouldn't, but at the same time, he's the most elusive quarterback in the NFL. So, I mean, we saw what happens when you get kind of a lead-footed pocket passer like Nathan Peterman in there. He was throwing interceptions everywhere.
Yeah, and to me, the biggest issue with the Bills' offensive line this season was just the entire right side of the line, no matter who was on the field. Especially Jordan Mills, who I'm pretty sure every game there's at least one play that Jordan Mills made where I just laughed because it was so bad.
Right. I know we rip on Jordan Mills a lot, and it's not Jordan Mills the person, where Jordan Mills the player is just not an NFL starter, let alone, I'm not even sure he should be on a roster anywhere. It's just from where we sit, with our season tickets in the stadium, you look up at the replay after each play, and some of the time it just seems like he's looking for someone to block, and he's not blocking anyone. I don't know if that's just kind of the zone-based scheme that they were running, but, man, it just seems like they could have put anyone else in there, and it would have been as good, if not better.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I will give him a tiny bit of credit. He played much better the last three or four games this season, especially run blocking. But like you said, he's just not someone that is an NFL offensive lineman, a starting NFL offensive lineman. He's a guy maybe that can be your sixth or seventh guy on the line, but to plug him in there for 16 games and try to do effective things on that side of the line is just not usually going to happen.
Yeah, so I guess I think Mills is on the roster because he signed a two-year deal. Do you see him coming back, or are they going to cut him to save? I'm not sure the exact savings. It's not going to be a whole lot, but...
So it actually doesn't cost them much to cut him because they're paying him $1.5 million salary and like a $450,000 roster bonus. So they only have to the thing it would cost to cut him is his signing bonus, which is only $200,000. I mean, so they could save like $2 million almost by cutting him.
You know, and like we said, it seems like they could find almost anyone that would play better than Mills did for a majority of the last season. Like you said, his play along with the rest of the offensive line did pick up the last few weeks, but you know, with how conscious Brendan Bean is of the cap, I think he is definitely, that's probably one of the biggest veteran players that could be cut from the roster.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be on the team next year. I can't see it happening. I mean, the Bills have right now, if Cordy Glenn and Dan Dawkins both come back, they're both going to play. So if for whatever reason they're both on the roster, you're going to play them both. So then you're going to have a left tackle and right tackle already anyway.
So you mentioned Cordy Glenn, Nate. Do you think he's going to be on the roster come the day that his roster bonus is due? And if so, do you even see him being on the roster come, you know, the first week of the season?
I think it's unlikely, and this is for two reasons. Number one, Deion Dawkins played like a franchise left tackle last season, and if he continues that and continues to improve, he is a franchise left tackle, and he's probably going to be better than Cordy Glenn ever has been on a rookie deal, which that would lead me towards thinking, okay, the Bills are going to try to move Cordy Glenn, because I don't think you can't cut him. You got to trade him, or he's going to be on your roster.
Right. You know, Nate, you and I both talk about value and how important that is in a salary cap sport. And if we just look at the contract of Cordy Glenn, he has a $14.45 million cap hit. It's the second highest on the team after Tyrod Taylor. And Deion Dawkins on his rookie deal is less than $1 million cap hit. It's just in terms of value, when Dawkins is more durable and played just as well as Cordy Glenn has when he's healthy, it just seems like an easy decision to get rid of a guy that cost you $14 million.
So what is his? What would it cost the Bills to cut him? It's like $10 million of the 14, right? If they just outright cut him,
it depends on when he is cut. I know Spotrac actually just had an article on this the other day. If we can edit this out, I'm going to find the article. So, $1.5 million of his 2018 salary fully guarantees on March 11th, which is before the league year begins, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct. So that they have to pay that.
And then $6.5 million more becomes fully guaranteed on March 16th, which I believe is the third day of the league year. And I think that's the same for Tyrod Taylor's contract as well. So basically, it's going to cost them $6.5 million if they wait to cut him after, or trade him after March 16th.
So basically, I think the deal for both of those guys is pretty much the same. You either trade them by March 16th, or they're on your roster come August.
Right. So, I mean, I think by the time we get to our free agency frenzy podcast here in about a month, we're going to know whether Cordy Glenn is on this team or not. And, you know, Deion Dawkins, I see him definitely being the starter at left tackle. I'm curious if they would even think about moving Glenn to the right side, or if they would move Dawkins over to the right side if Glenn appears to be healthy and not have any issues and they keep him on the roster.
I would imagine that if Glenn's on the roster, he's going to play right tackle. You can't not play him. He's played some right tackle in the past. It's actually, I think, better on his bad knee anyway to play on that side of the line So he will play right tackle if he's here. I just think it's unlikely, given how many teams could use a left tackle and the kind of value he has in a potential trade, especially if they're trying to move up to get a quarterback. I think he's going to be gone by March.
Yeah, I agree with you, Nate. I mean, I just can't see paying a right tackle $14 million. It's just insane value-wise. I think he could be very well be a package deal to move up into the top five picks there. I mean, pretty much all of those teams could use a left tackle. The Giants, the Broncos, the Browns potentially if Joe Thomas doesn't return, if he decides to retire. And even the Colts, too.
Yeah, they definitely all could use left tackle, and it would be interesting to see, especially the Broncos and the Colts are two teams that I think are interesting matches because the Colts have a quarterback, and
Colts have two quarterbacks.
The Colts have two quarterbacks. I guess that's a good point, and they could potentially move one of them. I don't think they will because Andrew Luck's health is so still in question. I think that's an intriguing trade partner for Buffalo come March 14th when the legal tampering period starts.
So I think the last guy we need to talk about at the tackle position is Chantrell Henderson. I know we mentioned this in our very first pod. It's a really intriguing option to kind of fill the void at right tackle at a pretty low cost. Is he a restricted free agent, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's a restricted free agent. Let me look real quick. So, Chantrell Henderson is an unrestricted free agent this offseason. Now, given his... He was drafted in the seventh round, but he was originally going to be a first or second round guy and had all this potential and played decent football when he's on the field. What do you think about him?
I mean, if he's healthy and if the NFL can stop suspending him for using marijuana for Crohn's disease, I think he's a great, affordable, valuable option to be the starter at right tackle. With him being an unrestricted free agent and those other teams are going to see those concerns, I think the Bills can get him at a veteran minimum deal, if not just a touch over it. And again, the value is there to cut Jordan Mills and keep Chantrell Henderson on your roster. Even if if he isn't the starter, it's a great depth to have.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've always liked Chantrell Henderson as a football player. When he's been healthy, completely healthy, he's been very, very good. It's just he hasn't been healthy and or unsuspended for very much of his career. So I think that there could be some other interest in him but around the league, but you can probably get him back on a veteran minimum if you want him back.
So, Nate, let's take a look at some of the tackle free agents, potentially if they're not re-signed by their teams. There's not a whole lot in the market here, and the offensive line market has just been completely blown up the last couple of years by teams that had money to burn. Do you see the Bills signing any guys like Jawan James or Nate Solder?
So, Nate Solder, no, because He has missed so many games the last couple of years, and he's 30 years old. I just don't see Brandon Bean wanting him, given the priority he places on availability. Jawan James is another guy who has availability issues. He got placed on IR at some point this year with a groin injury or something. And, I mean, he's great. He's a great right tackle. But I think he's going to cost way more than Brandon Bean is willing to pay.
Right, and I think we're going to see this position be more of something, they find already on the roster, like Chantrell Henderson, but I think they're definitely going to be adding a tackle in the draft. It's just a matter of when. I can't see them, if they decide to stay at 21 or 22, taking a tackle, even if one of the big names falls. It's just they have more pressing needs elsewhere on the field. I don't see them spending a first-round pick on an offensive lineman.
Yeah, I agree with that. I can definitely see a first-round pick being spent on a defensive lineman, especially an interior defensive lineman. But offensive line, I think it's going to be a skill position on offense, defensive line in that first round, those first-round picks.
Right, so now we'll move on to the guard positions. And, we've had the revolving door of John Miller and Vlad Dacoste there. Neither one of them played inspiring. Do you think either of them are on the roster next season?
I mean, I think he, Vladimir Dukast, maybe not. Because they just signed him last year. He's easy to get out of his deal. Say, you can say like $1.4 million or something getting out of his deal. John Miller is a guy they drafted and has been there and is still a bit younger. I see a way higher chance that he's on the roster than Dukas.
Right. And John Miller actually was one of the sort of comeback players of the year, his sophomore season in Buffalo. You know, he had that shaky rookie season, but it seemed like he really found his way and played well in that scheme his second season. He just didn't fit Dennison's zone blocking scheme here in his third season. So I mean, I think he's got one more year left in his deal. I just don't see any value in just cutting John Miller. I think he's going to be on the roster regardless of whether he's playing or not.
Yeah, and if you keep Miller, you kind of, I think you have to get rid of Dukas because you have Ryan Groy also, who can play multiple positions on the offensive line, and that is fairly valuable to have in a backup.
Right, but now that you mentioned Ryan Groy, I think a lot of people are talking about the Bills drafting a center, and I just remember how well Ryan Groy played when Eric Wood was out with his broken leg in 2016. I mean, Groy played almost as well, if not as well as Wood, over the final seven games of that season. Like, it just seemed like you didn't even notice that Wood was gone.
Yeah, I completely agree. He did have a really good stretch there, but that was probably in his entire career the only stretch of multiple games like that where he's looked really good. So he is someone that is definitely an option, especially if the Bills don't see value in drafting a center, especially earlier in the draft. He's more than capable, and that's why I think he's definitely on the roster, and he probably has a chance to compete for the starting position.
Right, and Ryan Groy, I just want to point out, also has a $2.5 million cap hit because they had to match the Los Angeles Rams offer last season because he was a restricted free agent. So, if you're going to pay
that
much money,
yeah.
Then.
Yeah, that means he's going to it's going to cost him almost as much to cut him as to pay him.
Right. So Groy's definitely on the roster, and I just can't see them paying a backup that much either, especially with how well he's played when he's in the game. You know, I'd really like to see Groy be the starting center, because if we look at the free agents for center especially, there's really absolutely nothing that you'd want to start over Ryan Groy that I see.
I mean, the only guy who is talented and young still is Weston Richburg from the Giants, but he's another guy, injury history. And I think it's actually head injury history, if I can recall correctly. There's no way that Bean is touching that.
Right. He did miss most of last season with a concussion, so I think that option's probably gone. But it seems like as we talk about what the Bills have on the roster here, they had some decent depth along the offensive line. It's just that the starting talent wasn't there on most of the line. So, you know, I could definitely see them looking for upgrades. I just don't think they're going to find it in free agency. I think they're going to find these maybe in the middle rounds of the draft and hope they find some guys that kind of fall farther than they should, kind of like Deion Dawkins last year.
Yeah, I certainly see the Bills drafting at least one, maybe two offensive linemen because, I mean, they have a left side of the line starting next year. We know for sure the two guys are starting on tackle and guard on the left side, but beyond that, there's no guarantee to who's playing in what position. So they have potentially three new starters next year. That's why I think they're likely to go get at least two guys in the draft they think could be potential starters, if not at week one this year at some point, either towards later on this year or their second or third years in the league.
And Richie Incognito, let's not forget, he is 34, going to be 35 years old, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. His days are numbered as a good NFL starting guard. I mean, they're paying him. He has over a $7 million cap hit, and I think it's the last year of his deal. So you kind of have to have a succession plan there as well. There are some intriguing options at guard in free agency. Do you think the Bills could shell out some money for one of those guys?
I just think it's extremely unlikely. I think that there's no way the Panthers can allow Norwell to leave. He's one of the best guards in the NFL. Probably one of the best three guards in the entire league. And same thing with Justin Pugh for the Giants. He's probably one of the best three or four guards in the entire league. Yeah, I think it's unlikely that either of those guys go anywhere. And beyond that, I don't know if there's anyone else that is priced correctly or the Bills take a chance at.
Yeah, and like we said, that offensive line market is kind of out of whack, and you know, we're kind of looking for it to come back to an efficiency point in economics terms. I think it was Joel Bitonio got paid like $12 million a year last year as a guard.
Yeah, and that's the Bills are, like you said before, the Bills are paying Richie Incognito a significant amount of money to play for them this year, like $7.5 million. And while he's probably still worth close to that, because I mean he's still playing at a Pro Bowl level, you can't sign him to another deal like that. If you're gonna keep him after this year, it's got to be for $3 or $4 million, and he could command way more than that if he has another Pro Bowl year this year. So they'd have to at least be thinking in free agency and the draft about who's gonna play left guard after this year.
Right, and I think we could definitely see some options open up if the Bills don't trade into the top five. And they do decide to trade Cordy Glenn just for a pick. I think, what would you value Cordy Glenn at, given his contract, his injury history? What could the Bills get in return if it was just Cordy Glenn straight up for something?
I think you could probably get a second round pick for Cordy Glenn. Just because he's under contract for three more seasons. So if a team you trade him to can have him play, and his cap hit actually goes down the next, after this year, his cap hit goes down the next 2 years after that. So I think a second round pick is about what he is probably worth.
Yeah, so we saw how valuable those second round picks were for the Bills last year. They traded back up into the front end to get Zay Jones, and I believe it was the back end of the second round that they got Deion Dawkins. So if you can acquire a third second round pick for Cordy Glenn, I'd say that's well worth it, given you know they've already lost Eric Wood and they're probably going to need a complete new right side of the line. Why not just kind of blow this whole position group up with the exception of Deion Dawkins and Richie Incognito, and you know, stack another draft pick up? Because if you do decide to trade up into the top five for a quarterback, it'd certainly be nice to have, you know, 3 second round picks.
Yeah, I think there's two things you get out of getting that third second round pick. First off, you have 3 second round picks, and if you don't have any first round picks or you spend all your capital to go up, you could even spend one of the second rounders to go up to into the top five. Now you can give up your 21, 22 in a second rounder if that's what the value is going to be, and you still have two of them. And the other thing that I think why the Bills want to move him, this is as high as his value is ever going to be. If you keep him for one more year, you're not going to get a second rounder for him, and you're going to get maybe a third or a fourth. So I think you want to, like we always talk about value, this is his peak value probably ever as an NFL player.
Right, and he's only going to be 28 years old. We've seen how well some older left tackles played, like Jason Peters and Andrew Whitworth. And, you know, if Cordy Glenn can stay healthy, he can certainly be that type of player. It's just, like we keep talking about, the value is not there to keep him on the roster. So it'd be great to unload that contract to a team that could really use him more than the Bills, considering they have Deion Dawkins, and acquire some extra draft capital while they're at it.
Yeah, and we've seen how aggressive Brandon Bean has been at acquiring draft capital, and he is someone who wants to build through the draft and have as much ammo as possible if he wants to try to make a move for a quarterback that he likes this year. And given the name I've been hearing floating around is connected to the Bills are going to need to get probably to 2 to get him. So I'd be curious to see how that would even work.
right, and you know, we've talked about how we think Mayfield is the top quarterback. You know, I would be willing to trade up for Rosen. I just think that Mayfield has the higher ceiling. And I think he comes at more value, too, because he's going to fall a few picks down. I've taken a look at the trade value chart, and you know, there's an enormous difference in terms of what you have to give up to move to 2 or to move to 5, where I think you might be able to get Mayfield. I mean, they might not even need to give up both firsts to get to that 5th spot with the Broncos.
Yeah, I completely agree. You might be able to get away with keeping one of the firsts to go to 5 when you definitely can't do that to go to 2. I think it just depends on what the Bills value at the position, because Josh Rosen is the most NFL-ready player today to come into the NFL and win games. If there was one guy I needed to win this season right now, I would pick Josh Rosen. I just think, yeah, but we both have said Baker Mayfield has this ridiculous ceiling. But he's a guy who might need a year or 2 years to get there, where I don't think Rosen's going to get much better than he is currently, but he's ready to play today. And if the Bills want to try to make the playoffs next year, if that's something they think is necessary, then I can see why they'd want to try to get to 2.
Yeah, we had some interesting interactions with Bills fans on Twitter, but from our Twitter account, we'll promote that at Bills_breakdown. You know, it seemed like there's a pretty even divide of people that are all in on Mayfield and people that are only all in on Rosen. I mean, I think we can be happy with either of those guys if the Bills get them. It's just, like we've talked about, how important that offensive line is. You know, it's great if you have Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, those transcendent talents at quarterback that don't need a great offensive line to be great. But you know, there's only a handful of those guys. So if you can get a good NFL quarterback, the key is to have that great offensive line that just makes the game easier at a position that's so difficult to play, like quarterback is.
Yeah, and that's another reason that I completely agree with all of that. And that's another reason that I think we've talked about the potential value in keeping Tyrod Taylor if you're going to draft a rookie that might need a little bit of work. Just because if you don't fix the offensive line, I don't want to – look what happened to Andrew Luck. I don't want to put a rookie behind an offensive line that where they could get killed.
Right, and we've seen careers, you know, derailed because it seems like it ruins a guy when they're just tormented by defensive lines their rookie year. It just kind of shakes a quarterback's development and their confidence. You know, we saw that with David Carr with the expansion Houston Texans. You know, I thought he was a pretty good quarterback coming out, and just he got sacked the most in NFL history that season, and I think that potentially ruined a good career.
Yeah, that I completely agree, and I think that did ruin his career, to tell you the truth. And the other thing that you worry about is having an Andrew Luck situation where your offensive line, he's a great quarterback. He's probably one of the best when he's fully healthy, one of the best 4 or 5 guys in the league, but he got hit so many times that his shoulder got destroyed, and now he's on his like 3rd surgery, and they don't even know if he's going to be able to play this season after missing all of last season. It's just, that's just a mess.
Right. So I think our key takeaway here is no matter who's playing quarterback for the Bills, they have to do something to try to improve this offensive line. And I don't think free agency is the answer. You might be able to find some depth players, but I think they really need to evaluate the talent they have on the roster, who they can keep, who's valuable there, and then, you know, try to acquire as much draft capital as they can to, even if they don't trade up, just kind of do what the Browns have done and get as much picks as you can, because you're bound to hit on a few of them.
All that being said, what is your projected starting offensive line for Buffalo Bills?
So I think we've got Deion Dawkins. So ask it again. We can cut that part out.
So, all that being said, right now, who is your 2018 Buffalo Bills starting offensive line?
So I think the left side is set with Deion Dawkins, Richie Incognito. I do think Ryan Roy is the starter at center. You know, we've seen him play well there. I think right guard is either going to be a new face from free agency or the draft, with John Miller being the primary backup there. I think right tackle, we could see, you know, a guy that's drafted or Chantrell Henderson, for, you know, depending on what happens there. I'm guessing your left side's probably the same, Nate. What do you have for the other three positions?
Yeah, my left side is exactly the same. I think Ryan Groy is starting center next year. And I think John Miller is going to be the starting right guard, at least to start the season, because if they go back to a power run scheme, which I'm hoping Brian Daboll will do and assuming he will do given the success they've had in it, John Miller fits. He fits perfectly, and he should have success in that. I think the starting right tackle is going to be a rookie, and the guy that, if I could pick a rookie to start right tackle, I'd pick Mike Pulvinci from Notre Dame. He played right tackle as a freshman and sophomore at Notre Dame, then left tackle as a junior, and his experience on both sides of the line, best offensive lineman in the draft. And that's my guy if I could draft one for the Bills.
So, McGlinchey, we know, is, as you said, the best offensive lineman in the draft, according to most people. Is that valuable for the Bills to take him at 21 or 22 if he's there? You know, it probably depends on what else is there, but
yeah, I think if McGlinchey makes the 21, you got to take him. You got to take him if he's there. I don't think he's going to drop to 21 though, but that would depend. Given if you're still there at 21, you have 22 as well. So I mean, you could take McGlinchey and take a quarterback, or if all the quarterbacks are gone, then you take McGlinchey and an interior defensive lineman. But
all right, so I think that wraps up our offensive line discussion. We don't want to bore you with any more of that talk. So that brings us to an end of episode 4 of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I'm your co-host, Alex Pallinger.
And I am Nate Schreiber. Subscribe, download, give us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast so others can give it a listen.
All right, you can check us out on Twitter @Bills_Breakdown, Facebook @Bills Breakdown. You can also email us, BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. We see we have some subscribers, you know, a couple in Europe, and I believe we saw some in Japan. So we'd love to hear your stories, how you found the podcast. So thanks for listening.